during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Broadcast here at Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7, coming to you live, by the way, from a beautiful downtown, well, not downtown, beautiful uptown Coburg, here at 1000 Elgin Street West. My guest in studio, Rob Washburn, and on the line, Rich Quarterman. We have been talking about the American election. This is sort of our afterglow, if you will, after the nightmare that was both the RNC and the DNC conventions. It's funny because I got to say this, Rich, because the mainstream media down in the U.S. I mean, they're saying that the RNC convention was just a crap show. And that the DNC convention was so much better. But realistically, I mean, there was turmoil on both floors for both parties, even though they had for the GOP, they weren't even looking to nominate a candidate. And yet still lots of heat on the floor. They managed to squash the dump Trump group on day one. But even with the DNC, I mean, people from the Bernie Sanders camp were having their signs taken away. They had their credentials taken away if they weren't going to be holding hands and singing Kumbaya. So can we talk a little bit about, if we can, the divisiveness that exists within those parties? We were talking about it just before the break, sort of what's happening with the GOP, but also with the DNC. And I mean, this is probably, at least as long as I've been alive, the most divisive election in my memory, anyway.
Mm-hmm. And what you're seeing is you're seeing fundamentally with the Republican Party, less so with the Democratic Party, some real true fractures in how they view government. The Democratic convention was more mild than the relative, as I like to call it, dumpster fire that was the Republican National Convention.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll cover the Republican one first. I mean, first of all, there's obvious fissures along, first of all, the personality of the candidate, and is this person even fit to serve as the president of the United States? The temperament, experience, skills, whatever, all the things that have made him both successful and a failure as CEO, and he's been both. What made Donald Trump whom he is today,
mm-hmm.
Now the question really is, and you're seeing some deep Republican divisions in that regard, does that make him presidential timber or not? And a lot of Republicans are saying no. Also, he has some disadvantages. Republicans are traditionally very much the cool, collected, they're pro-international trade.
Mm-hmm.
They are not, by and large, very nativist. They are in certain ways, but not in the way that Donald Trump has espoused. And it's allowed for a particularly ugly form of angry politics to have entered, in particular among angry, somewhat disenfranchised conservative whites who are not necessarily religious, but feel left out of the system. He's giving a vent for their anger, which in a fractured Republican Party that started out running 16 candidates,
mm-hmm.
and eventually left with a somewhat underwhelming two in Cruz and Trump. By then, Trump had already built his complete advantage. It didn't really much matter. Kasich might have been the hope of the more establishment Republican, but he didn't get his campaign off the ground until Florida, and by then it was already too late.
Well, and Rubio was supposed to be the next great leader of the GOP. I mean, they talked about Rubio because, of course, Cruz, you mentioned, he's an outsider too. I mean, you know, even senators don't like Ted Cruz. I mean, the guy knows how to burn bridges like nobody I've ever seen in my life. I got to stop you there real quickly, though. We do have a caller online. We're going to take the call. We'll see if we can do this without getting some feedback here, listeners. All right, go ahead. You're on the line, Ed.
Yeah, okay. I'm just going to ask a question here about, I think probably Rich, I would like to ask the question of. The average guy on the street down in the States, like we look at, we read the papers and listen to the news and all that kind of stuff, and everybody up here is going, oh, geez, you know, like there's, one's crazy, the other one's dishonest, you know. What are the people in the States actually thinking about this? Do they think the same way, or is this just a media thing?
That's actually a really good question, Ed, and I have to turn you down, unfortunately, to get Rich's response there.
Okay.
But I'm going to repeat the question to him anyway.
Yeah, no, I got it. It's a great question. You know, the U.S. election, more than anything else other than the Super Bowl, is perhaps driven by the media as an American phenomenon. So you will see people publicly or in exchange with others say, you know, Trump is crazy, Clinton's dishonest, Jill Stein's a wackadoo, and I don't even know what libertarianism means. In a presidential election, because it's kind of one shot, everything gets heightened. The media coverage is higher, our personal feelings are higher, everything in the United States. So yes, if you are a pro-Trump person, I have seen all over Facebook for my pro-Trump friends, they call her Crooked Hillary. And a lot of my pro-Hillary friends are calling him Crazy Donald Trump.
I think Ed's question, though, is that because of mainstream media? Is that what's come? Am I correct? Hold on a second. Here, let me just turn you down a second, Rich. Am I correct in that one, Ed, that really, you know?
Yeah, I would like to know, like, if you went to 27 Mulberry Street, do they, like, if they're into it at all, are they thinking the same way?
Okay, I think that's a good question, Ed. I'm gonna have to hang up on you there, but I think you have another question?
Yeah, I was just going to ask, the other thing I would like to know, knowing nothing about this, you talk about down ballot people running and all that. I was just wondering, is there one ballot for the entire nation of the United States? And like they have like Clinton and they have Trump and then they have five or six other people on the ballot. Mm-hmm. Is it the same ballot in every state and every consistency?
Well,
is it the same thing?
I can answer that question for you without Rich here. Each state, because of course not every state has the same candidates running. The same presidential candidates are running. So every state will have those people on their ballot. And then the down ballot candidates would be whoever your state Senate or congressional representatives are. If you're electing a governor this year, then that person will be on the ballot. All of those are listed on that ballot as well, from the lowly garbage collector who gets elected all the way up to whoever your presidential candidate is. The consistency across every state is who are the presidential candidates. I mentioned before that Bernie Sanders is on the ballot in 43 states. As I say, you can write in Bernie Sanders at that point because he's already on the ballot. But in terms of those main candidates, yes, they're all on the same ballots across the U.S., but each state, of course, and each district has their different initiatives that are also on the ballot, like Proposition 7 or 8, which
sure.
Proposition 8, that was in California.
How many candidates are on the ballot for president?
Well, that's actually a good question, and I've got a pretty good list here for you, if you'll just bear with me one second.
Okay, I'll let you go.
We've got that. I'm going to terminate the call with you. I'm going to get to the answers for those questions for you just a second, because there's quite a lot of people that are running for the presidency.
Okay.
So well, I'll let you I'll see if we can't get Rich to answer that other question, though. Thanks, Rich. Sorry about that. Okay, so the question was, the sentiment that's out there, you know, you say you've had some friends that are anti-Trump or that think Hillary's a crook. Are they getting that of their own volition, or is that something that's being driven by mainstream media? I think that's Ed's question there. And the other question he had was with regards to down ballot candidates. Does that mean that's a really long ballot, or who's listed on the ballot?
Yeah, it's a, first of all, an answer to the question to the people on 27 Mulberry Street care. This election, more than any election that I remember, people are emotional about it. In exchange, the media reflects that, which I think in turn counter or cyclically creates more passion for it. There, I have never seen so much emotion invested in an election in all the years. I've been able to vote in every election since 1992, and I've probably paid attention to everyone since about 1984. I've always been kind of a political junkie, even as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen this much emotion, and I think the media takes that and feeds it back, and it kind of grows up cyclically.
But also, don't you think that the social media also plays a role in this, that in previous elections, we would not be as conscious of the emotions and the feelings and thoughts and ideas being exchanged, because it would be done over a fence or at the coffee shop or maybe at church or where we run into other people, whereas now we have this global podium that we can get on through Twitter or Facebook or whatever social medium you want to pick, and we can now express ourselves very succinctly or with great vehemence or whatever. All of our emotions come spilling out, and this also sort of churns the pot a great deal. I mean, Dave, you're very involved on Twitter, debating with people all through the Sanders campaign, and even now with the presidential election. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. Yeah. No. I've and there's a huge audience out there of people like Ed, people who want information. You know, and that's the thing about social media that is really sort of churning this election even more so than the Obama elections, in my opinion, Rich, is the fact that there's people out there that are actually hungry for information. And with social media being what it is, the great tool that it is, it's easy to get that information to people. Mm-hmm. It's easy to just copy and paste. Oh, you found a great piece here. I mean, I've had arguments with people on Twitter saying, I don't know what I'm talking about. I had one guy say to me, oh, you keep talking about this, but you don't have any facts to support you. You know, and I tell people, I'm not here to do their research, you know, but here's a link. Boom, here's a link. Here's, you know, at that point, people aren't arguing with you anymore. So I think that's probably been a great equalizer here in terms of being able to counteract or countermeasure some of the statements that are being put out there about all of the candidates, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about Clinton, and I know I keep going back to her, people think I hate Clinton's guts. I'm sure she's a wonderful lady. I just wouldn't vote for her myself. But the thing about her is, you know, she has all of this information, you know, this wealth of information that goes back to when her husband was the president, goes back to when she was in Arkansas. You know, the fact, that she smeared every woman that ever said Bill touched her in an inappropriate fashion. I mean, she totally undermined every one of those women. So when they talk about her as a feminist, I got a real sort of a choke in my throat about that. Whereas you got a guy like Donald Trump, who was organizing, and this again, these are facts, organizing bizarre sex parties in the 80s and 90s, where people were being brought to wherever he was, wherever his hotel was, and there was a lot of weird stuff going on there, and that's all coming out now because you've got people who are witness to that effect. So this is a really emotional campaign for a lot of reasons, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that the research and the information for a lot of this is right at people's fingertips.
And I think it's interesting, too, that when we talk about media, we often think that means news media, whereas I think this in this current conversation and the ones that we're going to have moving forward, what we're really talking about is a much broader media that includes social media, that includes YouTube and all these other sites that exist, the podcasts. I know you like to, you watch a YouTube channel called Young Turks, don't you?
I watch Young Turks with Che Gregory, yeah.
And I mean, they've taken off in this election as a source for information about what's going on. So I think that makes a huge difference. I'm sorry we had to lose Ed so fast. I really wanted to ask him, you know, how he would have voted. Had he participated? Because he really, to me, he epitomizes always in our conversations the sort of the grassroots, down earth kind of guy
who
pays attention and has lots of good things to say. And mm-hmm. and I always feel good when he talks, because you really get centered on what really matters to the guy on the street. He's a small businessman. He's lived a long time in the community. He's the type of voter that he was describing in the States. So that would have been really good to have heard how he would have voted.
Well, if Ed wants to call back and let us know who he thinks he would support, we'd be happy to hear.
And why, yeah.
Quickly, if you could tell us, Ed, who you would vote for and why, that'd be an interesting if you want to call back. We're going to take a quick break here, Rich, because the time is flying by faster than I can imagine. And we're going to take our first break of the hour. When we come back, more of our conversation, more of the, I think we really should sort of, if we can, pare down onto this idea that because of the way people are connected now, that this could be a really phenomenal campaign. We'll be right back after the break, listeners.
Sounds good.
Like live music? Enjoy being active outdoors? Free Thursday evenings? Then we want you. Join Northumberland 89.7 as we present Music Emotion at the Victoria Park Bandshell every Thursday evening from 6 until 9. Bring your friends and family. We would encourage you to stay active and support the local music scene.
And join us this week on August 4th to enjoy free yoga with Elizabeth Palermo and live music by the Uncle Charlie Experience.
My cousin Bob and I decided to quit our hustle and bustle jobs in the corporate machine and become entrepreneurs. We are now the proud owners of Curio City. Bob has always had a keen eye for Biblo. With the legal advice of Jim McGrath, we learned the best way to set up our business, plus Jim helped us understand our lease. Jim McGrath has been lawyering for over 30 years, so he knows what makes sense in business law, plus he's a real nice guy. Call Jim McGrath today at 905-373-1999 and tell him Cletus sent you.
Come out and enjoy a fabulous movie-going experience at the Rainbow Cinemas.
Playing July 29th to August 4th, Jason Bourne, Ice Age Collision Course, no free passes accepted Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, and Star Trek Beyond.
The Rainbow Cinemas are located in the Northumberland Mall, 1111 Elgin Street West. Give them a call, 905-372-2444, or visit rainbowcinemas.ca.
How is Northumberland 89.7 truly local radio? We reflect the diverse interests of this area with unique and varied programs hosted by people who live in our community. Check out our complete programming schedule at northumberland89.7.ca.
And welcome back to The Drive Time. My guest online, Rich Quarterman. I want to thank Ed, by the way, for that call, because, you really hit the nail on the head with that one, Rob. I mean, he when he calls in, his questions are always very to the point, and he gets it. And that's one of the reasons why we do this show every week here, and why I do it every day, just so we can keep people informed. And as I say, I'm not here to give you an opinion. I'm hoping I can amplify your already existing opinion. Welcome back, Rich. So before that break, we were talking about the impact of social media, and I think that's an important role here, because there's still all these revelations coming out about Trump and his past. He's not the great businessman that everyone that he likes to sell himself as, and with Hillary Clinton, with let's face it, she's got more baggage than a 747, and a lot of that may be valid, and some of it may be unearned baggage. But still, it's a lot of baggage, and I think that's really what plays into the trust factor. And right now, I got to say, if I were an American citizen who could vote in this election, to be honest with you, I honestly don't know what I would do. I would feel compelled to write in Bernie Sanders, because I think that. But, I've talked about that on Twitter, too, and that's something that's come up on social media. And people are saying, well, that's great, except you've got GOP and DNC people counting the ballots, and how many of those Bernie ballots would disappear? So,
well, and you also were saying earlier today before we went to air that I think there was something on Twitter about Trump quitting.
Yeah.
And of course, that's totally false. It was a perversion of a story about somebody wanting to encourage him to maybe step aside. But I mean, there's lots of people who've asked him to do that. But I think that's one of the dangers of social media in this environment, is that misinformation can come out just as fast and move just as quickly as accurate information. How are you finding it following? I know you follow social media down there, Rich. What are you finding? What's your experience?
Well, it's interesting because obviously one of the things, particularly in regards to Twitter and Facebook, you can always The one disadvantage is you can always pick and choose whom you want to follow or favorite or like or whatever,
mm-hmm.
which means that if you don't spend – I try to make sure that I follow, for example, the House Transportation Committee, which is currently run by a Republican group, and the White House, and which, is, of course, is occupied by President Obama as a Democrat. I try to make sure that I get multiple sources, and I follow a bunch of the Canadian publications so I don't talk out of my hat. When I'm talking about Canadian politics however that's going to work, or particularly between the politics between U.S. and Canada living on a border state. So one of the key things that I think is really important about social media is that there tends to be this repeatability equals fact issue. If you're not discerning, and no, not anyone here on this radio program, but one of the key things about the U.S. that I've noticed in its people is that a lot of people follow the same people, which provide them a degree of confirmation bias of their own personal beliefs. That's the biggest danger to me in social media, is that people don't follow enough differing opinions. I have some friends of mine who are, by the way, educated, intelligent people who support Donald Trump. I'm still trying to figure that out, but there it is. But it's important that I treat them with respect, not only because I know them and they're my friends, but also because they have, for whatever reason, found this opinion, and that's what they want to go with. So I find it very important when people have a differing opinion, even if I consider it not my own, that it comes there. And I think a lot of people that I've noticed in the United States follow only the people who already agree with their preset opinion. And that, to me, is extremely dangerous because it defies rational discourse.
Right.
You know, it's interesting, Rich. We've seen how the internet plays with these things. The WikiLeaks that just happened before the Democratic National Convention took place absolutely turned that convention on its head within a matter of 24 hours. Demonstrating, I think, the incredible power that this medium has for delivering information and authoritative information. I mean, here's the emails. You can go through them. You can figure it out for yourself. And then, you know, various news organizations, of course, grabbing hold of that, and the political parties grabbing hold of it, all that kind of stuff. I mean, we really get a sense of how powerful this can be in terms of not only shaping public opinion, but also how it plays out for the campaigns themselves.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's very important. I mean, one of the things now that Twitter has added something like Periscope, which gives you the ability to sort of live feed in your video,
mm-hmm,
and same thing with Facebook. This creates not only social media channels with links, but actually you can sit there, scroll through your Facebook or your Twitter, and boom, up comes, you know, Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump or Jill Stein or Gary Johnson making a comment and giving you a live reaction to whatever is... This is an extremely fascinating, because we are going to get more live and unfiltered reactions from candidates than we've ever had before. More cameras, more internet, more everything going on. So a lot of times, for example, if Donald Trump were to have run in 1880, when he'd just be a robber baron, you know, during the Gilded Age, 90% of the comments he's made would never have gotten to the majority of the electorate, because they would have... You know,
well, even 30 years ago, for that matter, before the advent of the internet. I mean, prior to 1983, nobody would have heard half of the stuff he said.
Exactly. So it's a whole different. This is why a disciplined social media internet approach is really important. And one of the things that's got to be driving, particularly the Republicans nuts, but also occasionally some of the off remarks from all the other candidates. And there are five that I think people, whatever their predilections, can vote for comfortably. I'll get that in a second. But it's a case where an undisciplined campaign will drive people who work for that campaign absolutely insane, because if nothing else, campaigns are about messages.
Mm-hmm.
And if your candidate's message is variant day to day, you lose the fundamental trust of your voters, who expect you to vote in the way that agrees with them.
Mm-hmm.
But,
so,
but,
Well, it's almost like building a brand, right? I mean, this is what exactly. What has to happen.
It's interesting too to note that, you know, Trump has been a master at commanding earned media through his use of social media, through the interviews that he does. I mean, he has less money than Hillary does. I think she has, what is it, $40-50 million in a war chest, whereas Trump has like a half or less than that. And one of the things that I've seen articles about is how she can outspend him, and he just doesn't have the resources to keep up with the kind of media blitz that she can do. So I mean, social media has been his tool to get out there. And I mean, I think part of what he likes to do is tweet something really crazy, and then all of a sudden everybody jumps on it, and then he's done this very successfully up until this point.
Yeah, and that's a great point. Up until this point. And I'll give you a classic example of why it's been good and bad for Trump. There was a discussion that has been rolling around social media on Twitter and on Facebook about specifically about vaccines. And all four candidates have opined on something. Dr. Jill Stein over the Green Party has said, well, there's some questions about that, kind of giving hope to the anti-vaccine group. And Donald Trump has tweeted something kind of weird about autism and vaccines, even though that particular study's been debunked. Gary Johnson came from a predictably libertarian stance saying, I don't think the government should enforce anyone to have vaccines, but I believe in vaccines. And then Hillary Clinton came back with what you might expect, kind of a, I think all children should be vaccinated, grandma knows best, which now that she's a grandma, she can go ahead and say that.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was an interesting approach in her case. She, taking that's a clear case where all four candidates gave an impression about the same issue, and everyone sort of jumped at it. And if I had to say, there was probably two winners. I thought Clinton and Johnson won that particular, and it's such a tempest in a teapot. It's not a really big issue on a voting scale, but it's an interesting that how that raced around the internet as a perception or proxy of how all four candidates think.
Well, it's interesting that it's a problem, that it's even a conversation, because let's face it, that's not something in the wheelhouse of the president. That's not the president's role. I mean, that's something that would be up to the states. I'm sure there are national standards, but each state, being a sovereign state, of course, can choose to opt out if they want to, for the most part. I think what we're seeing here is, again, this is one of those ideas where, in my mind, that's a manufactured crisis. That's like, let's throw a question at the president that he can't answer, because, let's face it, it's not in his wheelhouse. So I think that's kind of ridiculous. One of the other things that's happening on social media, Rob, I hate to cut you off, is this idea that they want to make America better. You've got this, we had the former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, talking about how people feel, and people feel that crime is up. People feel as though America's on the wrong track. Paul Ryan talking about how people feel the economy isn't doing good, and people are feeling this, and people are feeling that. First of all, you know, a lot of what they talk about is not even remotely true. I mean, crime is on a 30-year decline. We know that the economy is better in the U.S. Mm-hmm. There's less people unemployed. But what they're not talking about are the real issues. You've got people working 40, 50 hours a week who can't afford to live. That is really what people are talking about when they say when they feel the economy isn't working. And I don't think that anyone in Washington, quite frankly, and I mean anyone in Washington, really has a handle on just what is going on the streets of America right now. I mean, this is probably one of the reasons why people can buy the Make America Great hats from Donald Trump, because people are living in a situation where, you know, they're being blamed for the economic crisis that happened in 2008, 2009. A lot of people are saying, well, that was, almost a decade ago, get over it. But these people are still struggling every day. The only candidate that talked about the struggling Americans, there's only two, actually, Jill Stein and Bernie Sanders are the only two candidates that even talked about this issue. So how do we get voters back to the reality that, you know, this isn't about feeling? As John Oliver said, you know, don't bring feelings to a conversation about facts.
Yeah, it's a great point. And one of the things that I think most Americans, what used to happen is that employment and wages, pretty much when a recession kicked in, unemployment went up, wages declined, and then it came back, and productivity rose, and then people started hiring again at greater wages. what happened, what has been sort of the last, particularly in the last 20 years or so, one of the biggest challenges, and especially for the younger generations, is there's sort of a form of global wage realignment, if probably is the best term. You've mm-hmm. got people in China, in India, in Russia, their wages are going up, up, up for the same kind of work that used to be reserved for Western Europe, Canada, and the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And that has created a global depression wage effect because Americans in general who thought, it, particularly those Americans with less than a bachelor's degree, mm-hmm. who thought they'd be able to enter the town factory, the coal mine, or whatever, and then work their way up through a series of skill-building things, that's not there anymore. And to that end, now everyone is pressing for the bachelor's degree, which is why Americans have a massive amount of student debt. And then even worse, they're finding that their bachelor's degree, unless it's in something very specific that's, you know, very much immediately applicable, isn't worth anything. So now they're thousands of dollars in debt with a education that does not give them any better value than having graduated high school.
Mm-hmm.
So therein lies the real conundrum, particularly in the United States, is this sort of offset wage depression. And the one thing I think that I would criticize, I don't want to directly criticize the Obama administration so much as I think the last, and I used to work for the Department of Labor as an economic analyst, one of the things I think that they have been slow to do is everyone talks about STEM and that, but the one thing they haven't done is gone after colleges who have beggared these students mm-hmm. and said, you are getting a degree in the fine arts, and then I'm going to saddle you with $30,000 a year in debt. So when you graduate, you're $120,000. But guess what you can't do? You can't get a big job with this degree.
No.
And therein creates however many billions or hundreds of billions of dollars of U.S. student debt is placed on it. And on top of that, your fairly well-off white students wind up, not only do they wind up going to state schools where they pay lesser tuition, but they also often have opportunities, things like internships and other social climbing, corporate climbing things
mm-hmm.
that other students don't get the opportunity to because they have to work in addition to study. So we're seeing a dichotomy, and this is one thing that I think particularly Bernie Sanders has spoken very intelligently to. He has spoken about making sure that community college, which is a two-year college, is tuition-free, mm-hmm. which is a fantastic idea.
Well, and it's in their platform now, right?
It's now part of the platform.
So
probably his number one point that got into the Democratic Party platform, I think, overall, is this emphasis on free tuition. And the fact is that tuition at community colleges being free, one, this would emulate a fairly smart European model. Two, the other part that's really important is community colleges are attended 95% of the time by people who live right in the community. So they stay in the community, they work in the community, they pay tax dollars in the community. In addition, so instead of going away to school, now it's a reinvestment in that community in higher education.
Exactly.
Brilliant point by Senator Sanders.
Absolutely. And that is a huge point. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more of our conversation. I know Rob's got a question he's been holding on to. So we'll be right back after this break. You're listening to The Drive Time. This is Canada's only holistic political chat. I'm Dave Glover. On the phone with us is Rich Quartermain, my guest in studio, Rob Washburn.
Friday afternoons are the best, and they're even better when you spend them with me, Jordan Appleman. Just listen to my show, The Core, happening on Friday afternoon from 1 to 4. It's the perfect show to relax to and get ready to enjoy the weekend. I'll play all the best music for you, tell you what's going on this weekend, and give you news that'll make you shake your head, smile, and maybe even learn something. Just listen to The Core from 1 to 4 on Friday afternoon on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
Well, that washer quit again.
Well, I don't know what to do with it.
Well, I do. If you need in-home service, new or used parts, previously loved appliances, advice, or stimulating conversation, come on down to Ed White Appliance Service, 51 Mill Street South, or call us at 905-885-7109. where we love to say, yes, it is worth fixing.
Northumberland 89.7 is radio to go. Listen to us on your smartphone wherever you are. Just go to Northumberland 89.7 and download the TuneIn app.
And welcome back. We're going to get back into our conversation with Rich here, but I thought we should let the listeners know, because this is one of the other questions Ed had, was how many people are running for the presidency? Well, let me tell you, listeners, it is crazy. There is the Democratic Party. There is the Republican Party. We know about the big two. Then we know about some other third-party candidates. Listen to some of these names. There is the Constitution Party of the United States. They're running. Darrell Castle out of Tennessee, Scott Bradley of Utah. They're running for president, vice president. The Green Party, of course, Dr. Jill Stein of Massachusetts and Ajuma Baraka of Virginia are running. You've mentioned this guy a couple of times, Rich, is Gary Johnson, the former governor of the state of New Mexico. He's running for the presidency with the Libertarian Party. And the former governor as well of Massachusetts, Bill Weld. So you got two former governors there running for what is basically a don't tax me, let me do whatever the hell I want kind of party. That's the Libertarian Party. And then there's other third party and independent candidates. You got the American Party, the American Independent Party. You got the American Freedom Party. You've got a group called Better for America Party. You've got the Constitution Party of Idaho. I don't know if they're just running for Idaho or the entire country or not, but they're candidates there. The party, here's something else that blew me away, the number of socialism in the title here. Party of Socialism and Liberation, the PSL. Gloria LaRiva of California, Eugene Puryear of the District of Columbia. The Peace and Freedom Party. You got the Prohibition Party. The Socialist Party of America. You got the Socialist Equality Party. You got the Socialist Workers Party. You got the Veterans Party of America. Two dudes from the West, one from Texas, the other from Nevada. You got the Workers World Party. And then there's just a whole plethora of other independents that are running in or are write-in candidates. And on this list, I'm quickly perusing here, I don't see Bernie Sanders on this list of write-in candidates, though. Here's, you know, he's on the ballot in 43 states. Does that mean that if people write him in, does he have to accept the win?
But you know what's interesting about this too, though, Dave, and the point I wanted to make before we went on break was that, you know, we were talking, Rich was talking very eloquently about the tuition in the college system. Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate that you just mentioned, also has, as part of her platform, free college tuition. And what's interesting about that is that a lot of people have started now to talk about Stein's role in the upcoming months.
As a spoiler.
And one of the things that was really interesting that I found was a CNN poll that said 13% of Democrats or Democrat independents plan to vote for Stein. And that shot her numbers up about 7 points right after the DNC convention last week. So I wonder to what extent she could play a role, or even Johnson. I mean, you look at Johnson's platform, and he's got lots of stuff in there that that any decent Republican would look at and said makes a lot of sense. I mean, he's talking about a 43% reduction in federal spending. He wants he's a fiscal conservative. He's a social liberal. He believes in non-interventionist military. He's a classical small L liberal. Wants to simplify government, reduce taxes. I mean, those are all things that would seem to me to appeal to Republicans. How big a role, Rich, do you think these people have in having an impact on the upcoming election?
You know, it's very interesting. I'm going to talk about Dr. Stein first. Dr. Stein is the kind of person that is going to attract a certain core group of very far to the left people who might have been disappointed in Bernie Sanders formally leaving, you know, or not, you know, opting to remain within the Democratic thing and support Hillary. Ultimately, what you really want to worry about if you're the Democrats is that she becomes kind of a Naderite, because Ralph Nader actually did more damage to Al Gore's campaign in 2000 than hanging chads in Florida did. He lost thousands of votes in critical states like Florida, like North Carolina.
Okay, but you know, I'm going to call you out on this one, because I know everyone says that, oh, Ralph Nader cost Gore the election. The reality is Gore cost himself that election. If he was the candidate that people wanted, they wouldn't have voted for Nader. So maybe Gore could have adopted some of Nader's platform issues and maybe gotten Nader to work with him rather than the opposite. Because, of course, historically now, since that election, since he lost, of course, he has become sort of a guru on climate change. And, you know, he's the canary in the coal mine when it comes to greenhouse gases and all of that. So, I mean, it's I always have a hard time because, you know, that's like saying that Justin Trudeau won because of the split votes of the New Democrats and the Conservatives. There's a lot of split voting going on. They're not necessarily between those two parties. I don't think you can blame another candidate for a person's loss. Their loss is a result of the fact that those people who decided to vote for that third party candidate decided to because they didn't trust or didn't like the other options.
And it's interesting, too. The CNN ORC poll from August 1st says in a four-way race, Hillary Clinton would have 45% of the electoral votes. Donald Trump would have 37%. Johnson, the Libertarian, would have 9%. And Stein would have 5% at the current level. So, I mean, how much ground would they have to make up before they would become a serious threat?
Well, the interesting part of that, the question really becomes, is for any third party in the U.S. to rise, such in the last one that really did, if you hold on to just aside La Follette's campaign or the Bull Moose campaign in the 10s and 20s, you really have to go all the way back to the rise of the GOP.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, you have to have a gulf in the prior party, in the case of the GOP, the Whigs decline massively and essentially destroy themselves as a party after Zachary Taylor, the General Taylor, ran as a Whig, but he really was never a committed Whig. The party imploded over the next few years, and in 1856, the Republicans kind of rose out of the ashes of the Whigs. So you have to have that particular dynamic as a third party. In addition, and this may be a case where the Republican Party is now imploding, the other part is that you have to have a compelling person. Gary Johnson has enough acumen. I'm not sure if he has enough energy to compel people to vote for him. He would pull, I think he's going to primarily pull, as Rob points out very, very wisely, he's going to primarily pull from the small L libertarianish Republicans. I think that's going to be the vast majority of his base. I think he'll get the most votes of any libertarian ever. As to whether or not Gary Johnson becomes John C. Fremont. John C. Fremont was the first Republican presidential candidate in 1856. If Gary Johnson becomes the John C. Fremont of the Libertarian Party, and the Libertarian Party siphons off enough Republicans to become its own third party, then you'll see by the next election, you won't see it necessarily this year, but maybe by 2020 or 2024, you will have seen the creation of a new party, because I think a lot of the Republicans, particularly those who are not in this sort of angry right version mm-hmm. of Republicanism, mm-hmm. will seek a different kind of approach. The Libertarian Party largely agrees with that, with some exceptions, but you could see a melding of that.
Well, you could see a melding, too, of the Republican Tea Party folk, too, because they say a lot of the same stuff that Gary Johnson is saying. I mean, other than they want to have basically God in office. But the difference there, of course, is same thing. Small government, keep the government out of my business. Let us do what we need to do. It's all about personal liberties. For some reason, personal liberties don't include personal responsibility, but that's always been a hang-up for me on that one. We're going to take our last break of the hour. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about this upcoming election and also what we see on a go-forward as this train wreck continues to wend its way across the landscape.
Most people tire of lectures in 10 minutes, but clever people can do it in 5. Many a man in love with a dimple makes the mistake of marrying the whole girl. The dry humour you can expect when Brian reads Leacock. Stephen Leacock, favourite comic author of Jack Benny and Groucho. Read by me, Pat Bryan, Sundays at 1:30 p.m. on Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio.
Tune in Mondays, 10 to 11 p.m. for Guitar Gear and More, brought to you by Long & McQuaid Musical Instruments. The show that reviews guitar gear and more and then showcases the bands who made it happen. You'll hear interviews with local talent and a special Long & McQuaid segment that keeps you in the loop of upcoming music trends and events, plus expert tips from our Long & McQuaid experienced instructors. Guitar Gear and More, Mondays 10 to 11 p.m.
Long & McQuaid, where the music begins. Got an upcoming event? Tell us and we'll share it with all of Northumberland. Email your information to info@northumberland897.ca.
And welcome back to the broadcast. My guest online, Rich Quartermain from upstate New York, Rob Washburn in the studio with us. We've been talking about the, oh, I like to refer to it as a train wreck anyway. You've raised some interesting points, Rich, historically. And it takes me right back to the election of President Abraham Lincoln. I mean, that's the last time the U.S. was fractured as much as it is right now. Of course, a lot of that had to do with slavery and their dissolution, if you will, of the Democratic Party, the resurgence of the Republicans. But again, here's a guy who won without winning any southern state whatsoever and still managed to win the presidency. So those are great insights historically. Rob, you had a point.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, you're calling it a train wreck. I feel more that we're really looking at a lot of wild cards. And I think one of the themes over our conversation the last hour and a half has been just how unpredictable and how different this election is going to be, whether it's through the types of media that people are going to use, the channels of communication, the breaking away from historic voting patterns, or even the platform differences compared to previous elections. I just think that there's a huge wild card. And, you know, I really feel like sometimes when we have these conversations, we're like a bunch of shamans standing over a goat entrails trying to figure out really what's going to happen, because I don't think you can say. I think things can flip on a dime. I mean, you know, Trump now, I understand they're going forward with the court case for Trump University. And, you know, how's that going to play out in this election? Hillary's still being investigated for the emails and what could happen if there was something explosive.
And the Clinton Foundation is now being investigated.
Yeah, I was saying earlier, you know, something like a revelation on WikiLeaks can take an entire campaign and put it on its head in 24 hours, you know, with major resignations of key figures within the Democratic Party. What's to say that can't happen 100 times between now and Election Day? I don't know, Rich, what do you think?
That's an absolute great point. And yeah, typically in the U.S., they call it the October surprise.
Yep.
And it's happened a few times.
Gary Hart.
Probably the most Gary Hart was one. But also looking back at, Gary Hart, relatively mild as far as these days, or, you know, you look back at it, but it was huge because it was big in the media back in 84. You look at, but also if you look really at the sudden decline in Carter's numbers in 1980, which had a lot to do with the capturing of Americans in Iran and the perceived ineffectiveness
mm-hmm.
of the Carter administration, even though he wasn't as much involved, but it was a perception thing. And you looked at a fairly even election that Reagan wound up winning by 7-odd percentage points in 1980. So there could still to Rob's point, there could very easily still be an October surprise going forward. Something explosive out of the emails. I'm not necessarily sure about WikiLeaks is one example, but it could be something, I think, not necessarily Clinton emails for really. I think that one's a little bit, I think Americans have grown tired of that. But if something else were to come downhill from, particularly from her time as Secretary of State, that would question not just her kind of honesty, but her actual competence, that could be huge. If there's more about Trump's business dealings that cast him in an even more negative light, that could be huge. In addition, if you were to see, say, for example, all of a sudden, we'll take Hillary Clinton, something explosive happens that, as Rob pointed out, we don't know what it is. Something explosive happens. All of a sudden, she has to drop out for whatever reason, or the party encourages her to. The next person up would be someone like a Bernie Sanders,
mm-hmm.
who then has to enter the campaign relatively late in the game. But now the question is, does the unpopularity of the other two, does the unpopularity of Trump then give the party give the victory essentially to someone like Sanders, which I think it would work to Clinton have to drop out. In the same way that they're talking just recently that Trump might be bored or whatever and need to drop out, then you're talking about taking someone even much further to the right in Cruz and mm-hmm. having to reshuffle the whole Republican deck with not a lot of time left as far as Republican election or as far as national U.S. elections go. So yeah, we are still in wild card territory. We're still in October surprises. Isn't even here. We're still in August.
Mm-hmm.
So
well, I wonder too because yeah. You know we've been getting the WikiLeaks about Hillary and the DNC. I kind of wonder, do they not have anything on Trump? I mean, is it just I mean, there's been a lot of backlash in the media. They're saying Julian Assange has a hate on for the DNC and for Hillary Clinton. But is it just that they're low hanging fruit? Has it just been harder to find stuff on Trump?
I think what Rich is saying is true. But I don't think we're going to have to wait till October. I think, you know, we'll wake up tomorrow and we're going to find something. And I think this is the kind of campaign. And that's why I say I think it's going to be a real wild card. I think this is going to be a real roller coaster ride. And, you know, we're just going to have to strap ourselves in. And you maybe have to take a few gravel over the period of the next few months.
And keep your hands and seat inside the vehicle at all times.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's valid. And I know we probably haven't answered a whole lot for a lot of the listeners out there, but I think this has been a pretty enlightening show just from a perspective of just what a gong show this has been and how it changes every day. Like Rob says, we could wake up tomorrow and there'll be some other incredible revelation. We know some senior DNC people have looked. Donald Trump have lost people from the Republicans. I mean, even his own vice presidential candidate today, Mr. Pence, coming out to speak on behalf of Paul Ryan, going against the Donald Trump campaign. So we're already starting to see not just fractures, but chasms between their vice president and presidential nominees. So it's crazy. Rich, we're going to have you back on here as we get closer and closer to the date. But I want to thank you for being here. Here's John Lennon, the song Power to the People. Let's wake up, voters, and elect a government that believes in democracy over corporatocracy. That's all I'm going to say. Thanks again, Rich.
You're welcome, Dave. Take care, everyone.